Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going
to
get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Welcome to another hot edition of WKAR's Current Sports, coming to you on this Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018. Fall is in full effect. A bit of an overcast on this Tuesday here in mid-Michigan. It's been raining, I feel like, for like the last 3 days. A bit chilly. Fall-like weather for sure. And because it's Tuesday, you guys know each and every Tuesday, Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football team, he holds his weekly press conference inside of the Tom and Loopy Izzo Media Center at Spartan Stadium, previewing that week's matchup and putting the previous week's matchup behind him. And of course, we all know that Michigan State pulled out an 11-point victory over Central Michigan University on Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium. Michigan State was highly favored in that game. The line was around 29.5, and Michigan State only wins by 11. So there are some mixed feelings about the Spartans moving forward. All right, Mark D'Antonio addressed that. He also gives us an update on how the team is preparing for Northwestern in spite of the injuries for this squad right now. He gives a brief injury update. And D'Antonio really talks about injuries, so I was surprised he even gave us an update when it comes to Josiah Scott. Also, Cody White, who has that broken left hand, and his status for this weekend, we won't see Cody White this weekend. Let's keep it all the way 100 here. I mean, a broken hand, it'll be a few weeks before we see White on the football field. But you get a chance to hear a bit of the Mark D'Antonio press conference from this morning. We'll have brief thoughts, a brief postscript on that presser. And then we will transition and briefly touch on your Detroit Lions, because yesterday's show was filled with college football talk as we tackled the Michigan State Spartans, I should say, in Central Michigan Chippewas. And then we went from there and talked about Michigan and Northwestern. And then I had brief thoughts on the Ohio State and Penn State game. So we did not really dive hardcore into Detroit Lions talk. In many ways, I guess I spared you Detroit Lions fans yesterday from that conversation, a heartbreaking loss to the Dallas Cowboys. We'll touch on that, and then we will dive into this whole drama when it concerns Le'Veon Bell. It looks like Le'Veon Bell is going to return to the team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, sooner than expected. I thought we wouldn't see Bell until about week 10, where, you know, at the latest he could show up and still be, of course, eligible for free agency. But the drama just continues to unfold out in Pittsburgh, and looks like Bell will return for the Steelers matchup against the Cleveland Browns. All right, so we'll have that chatter for you, as well as we will invite, of course, you all to be a part of the hour, as you customarily are. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also weigh in on social media. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there. You can comment below that video and I'll read your comments live here on the air. And you can tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Here are your quick hit headliners.
All right. I want to let this be known to all of our listeners out there. We brought to you the story of Michigan State football player, former Michigan State football player Mike Labinjo, who passed away not too long ago. He died on September 22nd in his home in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. He was just 38 years old, and the cause of death still hasn't been yet disclosed publicly by his family members. But with that unfortunate story, you can help out the family of Labinjo, in particular his daughter. An effort is underway to help the daughter of Mike Labinjo. And family and friends of Labinjo have set up actually a GoFundMe.com account to raise money for his daughter, Haley Labinjo, who is just 10 years old. So that's a really cool way that you can contribute to the legacy that is Mike Labinjo, just 38 years old, gone too soon, without a doubt. All right, on to more, well, I should say less important matters. Whether starting defensive end Rashawn Gary and running back Chris Evans will be available for Saturday's game for the University of Michigan college football team against Maryland is a bit unclear. Evans has missed the last two games with an undisclosed injury, and Gary appeared to suffer an injury to his right shoulder and arm during the game at Northwestern last Saturday. So that could be two big losses for U of M moving forward. I really don't think they need those two against Maryland. But again, it's college football. Anything happens. Anything can happen, I should say. And not having those two would hurt, without a doubt. All right. And speaking of the Michigan football program, Michigan's first home night game of the 2018 football season will take place later on this month on October 13th against Wisconsin. The program made that announcement yesterday that the Wolverines tilt with the Badgers in 2 weeks will kick off at 7:30 p.m. on ABC. It will be Michigan's second night kickoff this year, as the season opener at Notre Dame was also a 7:30 p.m. kick time. There is also potential for the game against Michigan State and East Lansing to be a night game. How insane would that be? A night Michigan State and Michigan football game? So the Wolverines will take on Maryland at home come this Saturday. I'm curious because you know what? And we used to have this conversation all the time, Jack, with Mark Hollis, former Michigan State Athletic Director, whether or not it's safe to have the rivalry game between Michigan and Michigan State to be played at night, because we all know how crazy that game could be. The in-state rivalry is real. Some cats out there cannot control their liquor and get a little too rowdy, especially even just during the day games when it comes to Michigan and Michigan State. I see it during my time covering this rivalry dating back to my college days, all right? So is it a safety issue or no? Do you think people can keep their emotions in check?
I absolutely think it's a safety issue. And the issue with this game being a night game is, as is, this is almost a game that you really can't take your kids to, even if it is a 3:30 kick, a noon kick, just because the rivalry is so toxic. I hate the idea of it being a night game, and I hated it last year as well.
Really? You're that against it?
I don't like it at all. No, I don't think rivalry games in general should be night games. I think night games are reserved for kind of what you saw a couple of weeks ago with Ohio State and TCU, you know, two big-time programs that don't have a ton of history. I think those are great for night games, primetime games. Generally, I don't want night games to be rivalry games.
Well, I tell you what, I think it's fun to watch. I will say that. I'm kind of on the opposite end in a way here, Jack, because, you know, primetime television, that is a coveted slot. And to have a rivalry matchup on that slot is awesome, I think. But I'm just concerned about the safety because, again, I've seen it firsthand. Fans get totally out of control when it comes to this rivalry between Michigan and Michigan State. Some guy starts talking trash, and it can lead to a physical altercation. And then the fact that it's, you know, at nighttime, I don't know. I just, you know, something happens with night games.
It's a toxic rivalry. It really is.
It really is. It gets personal, man. I, you know, just looking at social media and some of the things I see on social media, it really does get personal. So maybe that's an early question I have for our listeners out there. Would you want to see Michigan and Michigan State, that football game, be a night game? Do you want to see that? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right, the Detroit Lions. Now, this isn't good news. Detroit Lions right guard TJ Lang He left Sunday's game against the Dallas Cowboys in the first quarter with a concussion. It is the second straight season that Lang has suffered a concussion. Lang suffered an injury, the injury, I should say, on a one-yard run by LeGarrette Blount, where it appeared he made contact with Dallas linebacker Jalen Smith. Now, to this point, Lang thinks he has suffered 4 or 5 concussions in his career. Wow, something that he said to Dave Burkett of the Detroit Free Press in a piece detailing what he believes are the challenges of football as he sees them and as it relates to concussions and head injuries. Of course, Lang's health is of most importance at this point. 4 or 5 already in his career. Now you add this one on top of that. Yeah, I just don't, you know, if the man upstairs blesses me with a son and he says, "Dad, I want to play football," we will be having a really serious conversation. All right, get well, Lang. Steelers All-Pro and former Michigan State football running back great Le'Veon Bell plans to report for duty during Pittsburgh's Week 7 bye, according to ESPN, ending an ugly and lengthy standoff after the star running back and team failed for the second year in a row to reach a long-term contract agreement. Bell has been the subject of trade rumors in recent weeks, but can't be moved until he signs his $14.54 million franchise tag tender, which is, of course, hinged throughout the season. Now, the Steelers are off to a 1-2-1 start without Bell, with the 28th ranked rushing offense. And it was reported that Bell has been looking at these games in his South Florida home on his couch, and he apparently can predict the plays that are coming the Steelers' way, and it is just eating him up inside. I'll have thoughts on Bell later on this hour. You don't want to miss that. Patrick Mahomes. The Patrick Mahomes train lost just a bit of steam during last night's game, but not enough to derail the Kansas City Chiefs' perfect season as they outlasted the Denver Broncos 27-23 to remain the AFC's only unbeaten team. Still, when the game was on the line, Patrick Mahomes showed up, folks. Mahomes spoke to SportsCenter and Scott Van Pelt after the game. Quote, "It was a great test. This Denver defense is the real deal." Mahomes finished with 304 passing yards, 1 touchdown apiece, throwing and running. More on Mahomes in just a moment. And MSU alum and former ESPN host Jemele Hill is joining The Atlantic, the magazine, as a staff writer covering the intersection of sports, race, and politics. She will also have a podcast. Hill said in a statement that joining The Atlantic, quote, "made perfect sense," end quote, because sports is a great entry point for exploring what's happening in the wider society. Now, in September, Hill announced that she was leaving ESPN after 12 years at the network. So congratulations to Jemele Hill. I knew she wouldn't be out the game for long. Clarissa Shields, Flint boxing champ. Shields scheduled November 17th, showdown with Christina Hammer for the undisputed women's world middleweight title is on hold right now due to an undisclosed medical condition that has halted Hammer's training indefinitely. Hammer confirmed that news in an Instagram post yesterday evening. This is what Clarissa Shields wrote, though, on Twitter. Quote, "I'm so damn mad right now. Like I want to punch a hole through a brick wall." We were very recently informed that Christina Hammer has a medical condition which will prevent her from participating in the bout with Clarissa Shields on November 17th. That's coming from Shields' manager, Mark Tafford, in a statement. He goes on to say, quote, "We were informed it is not an injury, but a medical condition for which she will be treated and expects to fully recover." So again, Shields will not be fighting Christina Hammer. In my opinion, the only competition that Shields has out there in her weight class in the world of female boxing. She did note, though, Shields did note that she will be fighting someone on November 17th. Who that will be, we don't know yet. All right. And last but certainly not least, Baylor in hot water. Baylor has received a formal notice of allegations from the NC2A in the wake of the university's ongoing sexual assault scandal. The alleged violations are considered major in nature and include a lack of institutional control and failure to promote an atmosphere of compliance by former coach Art Briles. What's not clear is what particular NCAA bylaws were allegedly violated. 19 former football players were accused of sexual or domestic assault by 17 women from 2011 to 2016. Lawsuits filed alleged higher numbers. So there you have that. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you have any thoughts on those or anything that happens to be on your sports noggin, call in. Again, I'm asking the question, would you want to see Michigan and Michigan State go at it on the gridiron in a night game? Or is that a little too out of control? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there. And you can tweet us, tweet the show, at WKAR_sports. Or tweet me directly, at Al Martin, WKAR. Can we give this guy a Hall of Fame jacket right now? Is it too early to say that? I don't think it is. Patrick Mahomes, barring any kind of crazy injury, knock on wood, barring any kind of crazy injury out there, Patrick Mahomes is going to be an NFL Hall of Famer. You can just see it. Certain talents, you know, when they first walk on the football field, some guys just have that it factor. And Patrick Mahomes has that thing. I mean, this is a guy who can roll out of the pocket and deliver a football right on a dime to his receivers. He's got a cannon of an arm, and he's quite the magician at times as well. As we saw last night, you just heard that first highlight. Patrick Mahomes, when they needed a big play, they needed to pick up a first down, he rose to his left, changes the football from his throwing hand, his right hand, his dominant hand, to his left, and just shoves it forward to the receiver. I mean, that was amazing. That was must see TV last night. I mean, it just unreal. Unreal. 27-23, the final on Monday Night Football as the Kansas City Chiefs top the Denver Broncos at Mile High Stadium. Mahomes already set a record with 13 passing touchdowns through the first 3 weeks of the NFL year. And, you know, Mahomes now really is the standard bearer for what other franchises want from that position, because his game really extends beyond being just a simple facilitator, working within the Chiefs' offensive structure. I mean, this guy can roll out the pocket, pick up yards on his own, you know, with his legs. He can roll out the pocket and still keep his eyes downfield and find receivers. It's amazing watching this young man play. I mean, during Kansas City's final two drives, because Denver really pushed Kansas City last night. And Case Keenum, my goodness, Case, you had, I forget who the receiver was. Jack, did you check that game last night? You remember when, if you did watch it, first let me ask, did you see it last night?
About the second half, not so much of the first half.
Did you check the fourth quarter then? Did you see that those final few drives for both teams?
Yeah, sure did.
Case Keenum, who was the receiver that he overthrew on the right sideline?
Oh, at the very end?
At the very end. I forget who the receiver was.
Was that Emmanuel Sanders?
It may have been I think it was Emmanuel Sanders. I think you just nailed it.
Yeah.
That would have been ball game. That would have been ball game right there. But Case Keenum just overthrew him, and that was it. And Case Keenum really picked on our former Cowboy, Orlando Scandrick, last night. I think Orlando, he's maybe still dealing with some injury problems, if you ask me. He was not great in coverage last night for the Chiefs. But, you know, watching Patrick Mahomes, he is fun to watch. Final two drives for Kansas City. Mahomes was 13 of 16 passing for 157 yards. He has the most yards outside of the pocket than any quarterback in the NFL in the last 10 years. That's amazing, isn't it? Unreal. He has thrown for 192 yards out of the pocket, the most such passing yards in the last 10 seasons. Man, fun to watch. I just wanted to acknowledge Patrick Mahomes and just kind of tip my cap to him, because he is must-see TV, and a star is now born in the NFL. Man, I wish I had him on my fantasy team. I'm getting my tail kicked right now. It was Demaryius Thomas, actually. Jack just corrected himself and corrected me as well. Demaryius Thomas was that overthrow from the arm of Case Keenum. But that was a fun game to watch last night, and Patrick Mahomes, keep on keeping on, bro. I'm excited to see how far he can lead this Kansas City Chiefs team. All right, let's talk about your Michigan State Spartans. Before we do, I do know that we have a caller. And again, I'm asking our listeners out there, you know, courtesy of our headliners, Quick Hit Headliners, you know, it's being debated right now whether or not, you know, Michigan and Michigan State should be a night game when they play later this season, you know, in just a few weeks now. Is that too crazy? Will it get too wild? Is that a safety concern? Would you want to see, and for those attending, for those who have tickets to that game, attending Michigan and Michigan State, you know, at Spartan Stadium, would you be kind of concerned for your safety or your little one's safety, you know, if you're going to that matchup and it's a night game? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to hear from you all out there. And before we roll the tape of just some of Mark D'Antonio's morning press conference as the Spartans prepare to play host to the Northwestern Wildcats on Saturday afternoon, coming off that win over Central Michigan University, an 11-point victory over the Chippewas. Let's go to our phone lines right now before we play that for you. We've got Mark, who is calling from South Carolina. Mark, you are on Current Sports. What's up?
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's up, Mark?
Hey, I mean, the beautiful thing is I leave my driveway, and I can see the ocean.
You're just going to rub that in our face, Mark.
And I've spoken with you before.
Right.
I don't know if you recall me before, but this is what I got to say. Numero uno is defer to the referees, mm-hmm. defer to the coach. When, you know, you, I don't know, fuck up or not fuck up, but you look to your left, look to your right.
Mark, we are on live radio. I mean, okay, can I vent just for a sec here, Jack?
Absolutely.
Why? We're on live radio. This is live sports talk radio. This irks me to know. This only happened probably a handful of times. I've been hosting Current Sports since 2013, April of 2013, since I've been hosting this show. I can only count a handful of times where this has happened. But why would a caller call into a live sports talk radio show and curse and drop the F-bomb? I just don't get that. Please, if you're going to do that, don't call the show ever again. All right, Mark, thank you for listening, but we had to cut the cord there, man. All right, to more important matters now. Mark D'Antonio held his press conference this morning, as he customarily does, inside of Spartan Stadium, the Tom and Loopy Izzo Media Center. Your Spartans now prepare to play host to the Northwestern Wildcats, a team that pushed Jim Harbaugh's Michigan Wolverines to the edge on Saturday. They had a 17-point lead, relinquished that lead in the second half, and Jim Harbaugh now has, courtesy of that comeback, his largest comeback dub in his college coaching career. So, Northwestern, a bit wounded right now. They come into Spartan Stadium a bit wounded and seeking to get back into the win column. This is a game that Michigan State certainly can't, nor do I think they will, overlook. Here's a bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say about this matchup against Northwestern and so much more.
Coach, down the middle here. Over the last three games, you've been outscored 44-7 in the fourth quarter. As you look back on video, is there a common denominator, and what level of concern do you have about the fourth quarter?
Well, we got to finish. You know, some of these things they're all different scenarios. I really haven't looked and said, okay, what's happened, and itemized them, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, obviously this last week, onside kick, trick play, one drive in the fourth quarter, which they were down on the 10-yard line, you know, I think, beginning of the fourth quarter. The Arizona State game, you know, that football game sort of, you know the storyline on that one. But big drive in the fourth quarter, you know, not a lot going on other than that. And then the Indiana game, they scored, field goal, maybe 10 points in the fourth, something of that nature. So yeah, you know, I guess you create another opportunity for me to go back and look at that again. So,
Mark, when you have a team that loses a key player like Larkin and running back in a situation like that, I guess, how do you game plan for that in terms of the bodies that they have without much tape to go on?
Well, I think Northwestern has a system in place, and their system in place, you know, we've got, and I'm back there looking at 2011, what we did against them. We didn't go back to 2007, but, you know, we've got a lot of football plays against Northwestern over the course of time. Coach Fitzgerald's been there just as long as I've been here. So there are concepts that they use, and you know they're going to use those particular concepts throughout their season and relative to our football games as well. So just look at those things, and they'll put people in there to run their system. I imagine we'll see different things that we always see and some new things, but we'll adjust. I think they use their personnel well.
Mark, with Clayton Thorson, he's been successful against you guys the last 2 years. One, have you seen a reason in particular why he's been able to do that? And two, does it help having, when you prepare for a quarterback, that you have so much game film on, just personally with your team?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he got some RPO plays. They hit some crossing routes where we blew a coverage or we didn't have it right on, or they rubbed us. And a lot of I can think of two instances last year where, you know, it created pretty big plays for him. So didn't play him well in overtime. Turn the tight end loose to the flat in man coverage when, you know, him ball, I got him. He runs the flat, take him. So some of the things are on us. Some of the things are well-designed concepts. And as far as Thornton, you know, what was the second part of the question? Yeah, I don't think it hurts. That's for sure. You can see the mistakes we made. You can see how we can rectify those things. And I think our players, and you know, we've got all of our players predominantly back, so we played against that system in the past. You know, they're a hurry-up offense as well, so we've got to prepare for that. A lot of different things you got to prepare for. You got to tackle well in space. That's got to be able to pressure the quarterback at some points. And then also, you know, you got to play the ball in the deep part of the field. They'll force you to do that as well.
Do you have an honorary captain for homecoming yet or not?
No, not yet.
Northwestern had Michigan down most of the game, lost a gut wrencher. Is it tougher to play a wounded bear, so to speak?
I think in this conference, every single week, you're in for a challenge. I don't care who you play. People prepare. They have a plan. I've said over and over, it's very tough to win. When you think you've got it in the bag, such as the fourth quarter question, you know, then, you know, you're fighting at the end of the fourth quarter to keep it. Just a tough conference. Tough conference, good football, and everybody expects to win. So I don't know about a wounded bear. I just think everybody comes in thinking that, hey, we're going to compete.
You guys are still number one by a pretty wide margin in rushing defense. What are you seeing that you're doing particularly well up front, and are there any similarities, I guess, with some of the other good run defenses you've had here in the last few years?
Well, last year we ended up number two, so we'll see if we can do that. You know, I think these type of things are made up over the course of the season, so we're going into the heart of our season. So a lot of who we are and relative to run defense will be defined, I think, over these next 4 or 5 weeks. But, you know, we're building the wall. We're not getting knocked off the ball. We're tackling well. We're limiting, you know, we're leveraging the ball well, those type of things. And, you know, we're making it difficult. So, you know, but consequently, you know, there's a lot of RPOs, which the quarterback pulls the ball. He could be handing it. He could be pulling it, depending on what he sees. And there's a lot of different things where they're putting the ball on the perimeter that are, you know, considered a pass, but they're really runs. If you look at them, you know, a bubble is really like a run. It's a perimeter run. So you got to throw all those things in there too.
Mark, over here. I wanted to ask you about one of your former players, Le'Veon Bell, and how much you've paid attention to that situation and what you think of – it sounds like he may come back in a couple weeks now. That's what people are saying. But what you think of that whole situation and what advice you would give him?
I obviously know what's going on to some extent. Probably you know more than I do. I got deeper respect for the Steelers organization, for Mike Tomlin. I also have deep respect for Le'Veon. So I think that's something that the two of them need to work out, and really I'm not qualified to talk about it. You know, I like both, you know, both parties and want to remain like that. How's that? Good answer? Political answer? We'll see. Oh, you guys are flipping.
Is it my turn? All right, I'm going.
Cool. Your turn.
All right, cool. Thank you. I'm sure in the recruiting, you know, you see a lot of quarterbacks sort of similar to Ladarius in terms of run-first guys and maybe don't have the best arm. But with him specifically, what is it that you saw in him that you knew that he could be a running back at this level and be able to perform at that position?
I probably watched more film on him last year personally than any other player that we recruited, because it was an ongoing thing. We had to sit there and say, were we going to recruit him as a quarterback? Were we going to recruit him as a running back? We actually offered him as a linebacker coming out of his junior year. So I thought he was a very good football player. I knew he could play somewhere. And in a lot of ways, I looked at him like Le'Veon, because Le'Veon did so much as a high school player, and I knew he could play probably outside backer if he didn't play tailback. And you know, keep hearing all the different things about him as a leader as well. So, but I just kept watching that film and watching him, you know, take the ball on his quarterback midline options and duck it up inside and make abrupt cuts. And I thought, I just kept saying, hey, if he learns how to play at tailback and continue to make those abrupt cuts, staying vertical with his pads low and running through tacklers, he'll be an excellent tailback. So we decided to take him. Or offer him. He decided to come.
Your philosophy, your favorite quote this year has been, hey, run that play that scored the touchdown again. And yeah, Dave Warner has come under a lot of criticism, and several of us not just me alone, but several of us who covered you for a long time, have tried to explain to fans, he has a boss, and he does what you want. Would you talk about your involvement in the offensive game plan during the week, please?
Yeah, first of all, on game day itself, I allow our coordinators to make these decisions. Now, I'm gonna always enter my opinions, maybe after the fact, before the fact, well before the fact, but I'm not going to disrupt play calling. I think we get the play in fast. That's as important as anything. Give our players time to digest what's being called. It's very difficult. You know, everybody across the nation is making these decisions in 20 to 30 seconds. Some work, some don't. A lot of that depends on execution, repetition, and then what's the defense been able to do. As far as my involvement in the offense, you know, I'm going to look to say, are we doing these things? Are we putting pressure on people on the perimeter? What are we doing inside? What's the basis of what we do? Do we have the concepts covered to be able to attack a defense from an offensive perspective? Are we covering all the aspects? Do we have a screen game? Do we have a perimeter game? Do we have an inside run game? How do we throw the ball down the field? How do we attack the football field vertically? How do we attack the football field horizontally? All these different things. And then you've got to say, okay, what do we rep? Because there's only so many things you can rep. And then you've got to get things different, ready for a game. Then I'm always self-scouting and saying, what have we run already? And, you know, when so-and-so's in the game, what do we run? And so then I walk back in and say, do a self-scout on what's it look like on third and long when we get into third and long. Not just what we ran, but how did we get into third and long? You know, what was not successful on first down and second down? And so I keep asking the tough questions, and then I'm going to walk in and say, we need to run this. I did today. I'd like to see this being run. Of course, that would be the only one that doesn't work. Okay, but so I'm involved, but I let our coaches coach. I empower our coaches. I do that with the offense and the defense and our special teams. And you have to do that because you can't possibly be an expert on every subject matter. I'm not the expert in the offensive line. I have a foundation of football. I'm an expert, I would say, in the secondary in terms of how to play things. And you could certainly point the finger back there, too, sometimes. So, you know, I try and learn and listen as much as I can, and then I ask tough questions. And then I want to see certain things implemented.
Mark, in many ways, the season is still very young. You had at least 8 games left.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still searching for the pulse of your team?
Yeah, I think you try and find your identity of every football team, and you don't know when that's going to come. And I talked to our team yesterday about that. You know, what's our identity? You know, we talk about here's the goals we want to accomplish. This next month, we've really been in 2 months of football, 1 month of camp and 1 month of four weeks of one Big Ten game and 3 out-of-conference games. So these next 4 games sort of start to define you a little bit, and then you chase November. You chase championships or chase bowl games or chase whatever in November. So these next 4 weeks are critical weeks, I think, for our football team. We got to get some players back who are hurt. I think we're going to do that. But, again, guys such as Trey Person, who played last week, should be a better player. I thought he played well with the exception of one play. But that's just an example. So I think you're right. You know, we start to develop an identity. You know, if you go back to 13, those first 4 games, who were we? You know, after 3 games, who were we? And then we lost to Notre Dame, or then I think we started with Iowa. We started to develop an identity, and coming out in November, we were playing our best football. And that's what you want to have happen. You want to play your best football through November.
Soward's moving into that starting role for the injured Cody White. What went into that decision, and how much do you think the other receivers will still factor in percentage-wise from a play-calling standpoint?
You know, all of our guys are, you know, it's concepts and it's reads. So who's ever playing that particular position and gets the read, and the quarterback makes some decisions to go to where he's got to go, I think that's the factor. So obviously we've got certain things where we want to target certain people, and we'll continue to do those things. And when you get to that level, that's warranted, then that happens. Otherwise, you're in the system. I think you're in the system. But, you know, we lost Cody for a little bit of time here, so we'll wait to get him back and other people. I think Cam Chambers will be back. So he's a guy that I think can play in there a little bit. And, you know, we'll get our other guys back as well. So, you know, just a matter of who's playing this weekend.
So, again, Mark D'Antonio comments coming from this morning's weekly press conference inside of the Tom and Loopy Media Center. And, again, just a few takeaways here. Josiah Scott, not practicing yet. D'Antonio said, quote, he's very close. We all know how important Josiah Scott was to that secondary last season, so he's still just trying to get back, and we'll see him, I assume, if I had to guess, at some point this month. All right, and also D'Antonio, very honest when it comes to what these next four games mean to his football program. Quote, you want to play your best football through November. These next four games start to define you a bit. These next 4 weeks are critical for our football team. And also, D'Antonio, very transparent when it comes to the criticism that Spartan fans have had when it relates to Dave Warner, offensive coordinator for Michigan State football, when it comes to Dave Warner's play calling. D'Antonio said, quote, I'm going to always enter my opinions, but I'm not going to disrupt play calling. I'm always self-scouting. I will keep asking the tough questions. And then I'm going to walk in and say, we're running this. And then D'Antonio went on to say, I did that today. So there's obviously something that D'Antonio did not like and felt needed a tweak or an adjustment here and there after watching the film from Saturday afternoon's 11-point win over Central. And he walked in today and said, we are running this weekend against Northwestern. I'm curious to see what that adjustment or those adjustments will be against the Wildcats. And also, Graham Couch with the Lansing State Journal asked Mark about any thoughts on Le'Veon Bell's holdout with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and what kind of advice would you give Bell if you could? And D'Antonio was very political. He was very politically correct, and he actually said, yeah, is that too politically correct right there? You know, he said he respects both sides. He has deep respect for the Steelers and a deep respect for Le'Veon. He's really not qualified to talk about it. Well, neither are we, but we will later on this hour. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will briefly touch on the Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys game from this past Sunday as the Lions lose another one. Fool's gold after that New England Patriots win, right? And then we will touch on Le'Veon Bell and his return to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And I do want to mention the MLB playoffs. There were two tiebreaker games yesterday, as if 162 games weren't enough. Well, the NL Central and the NL West were decided yesterday. The Milwaukee Brewers topped the Chicago Cubs, and the Los Angeles Dodgers topped the Colorado Rockies 5-2. It's early. We're going to do a baseball playoff preview later on this show. Later on this week in Current Sports, I should say. So stay tuned for that. This is when I really tune in to baseball. I mean, we haven't talked a lot of baseball here on Current Sports throughout the summer months simply because the Detroit Tigers were just so bad. And thank goodness that season is over. They are in full rebuild mode. But if you have to pick Jack Kerwin, first off, are you a big baseball guy? Do you watch playoff baseball?
Sure.
You're not diehard, though, are you?
You know what? I wouldn't call myself a diehard Tigers fan. I mean, it's impossible to watch right now with how you know, where they're at in their development right now, rebuilding, just like you said. And, I mean, they stink. But yeah. You know what? I'm right with you. No, I'll be watching the playoffs all throughout October and into the start of November.
Playoff baseball is fun. Early World Series pick. I don't know how you can pick against the Boston Red Sox, in my estimation, right now. They are really, really good. From top to bottom. And I'm a big Mookie Betts fan, too. So I don't know. I'm going with Boston to let my cat out the bag early. What say you?
Well, I was going to say Boston, but for the sake of standing out here, because, you know, Boston's the easy pick because, I mean, this is an all-time team you're talking about with the Boston Red Sox in terms of, I think, 106 wins they finished with.
108.
I'm sorry, 108. So yeah. I guess I'll say Astros over the Brewers.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice. Interesting. All right. Well, again, we'll talk more playoff baseball as the week rolls along here on Current Sports. And if you're just now joining us and you happen to miss our brief presentation of Mark D'Antonio's press conference, you can listen to the entire press conference later on our website at WKAR.org. Visit WKAR.org around 2:33-ish, and we'll have it up there, and you can listen to the entire thing for all of you diehard MSU football fans out there. Now, brief convo on the Detroit Lions and Dallas Cowboys for all of you diehard Detroit Lions fans out there. I don't know how you guys do it. First off, Detroit Lions fans, I mean, you have to be one of the most depressed fan bases in all of sports. I mean, this is a franchise that has never won a Super Bowl. They won an NFL championship back when it was called the NFL championship, not the Super Bowl. They've never won a Super Bowl in the Super Bowl era. And, you know, this team, every single year, you get your hopes up, and they just punch you right in the gut. And, you know, your hopes got high last week on Sunday Night Football when the Lions pulled out that win over Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And then you looked at my Dallas Cowboys team, who has not looked impressive this season, and you said, we could get a win there. And you almost had it. The Lions had this game. It was in the bag. Matthew Stafford played remarkable. How about Golden Tate's performance? I mean, the Lions looked solid offensively, but defensively, they couldn't do anything. Offensively, great. Defensively, they couldn't stop anybody. And Ezekiel Elliott, who has struggled this season, you know, he broke out for a career performance against the Detroit Lions, who were rocking the gray on gray, which I like, by the way. If anything looked good on Sunday other than the Detroit Lions offense, it was the Detroit Lions jerseys. Tom Crawford disagrees with me. He doesn't like the – did you like the gray on gray, Jack? I like the gray on gray jerseys that the Lions rocked on Sunday.
I'm lukewarm on them. Don't have a big opinion. Wouldn't really want to see them every week, but no, I certainly didn't mind them.
I like them. I think they – are they like the Nike color rush? I don't know. They are the Nike color rush.
You know which ones I loved were kind of the throwbacks that they wore on Thanksgiving last year. Kind of back to the Barry era.
Was that all blue?
It was blue, plain silver helmet.
Okay. I can't remember.
They were pretty basic, and it was basically all blue, but I like those a lot.
Yeah. Well, I like the gray on gray. I had no problem with the gray on gray, but Tom and I debated back and forth on Sunday about that. All right, but now when it comes to the performance, I'm puzzled on a few things here. You know, one of the big storylines after the game was the lack of touches that running back Kerryon Johnson received. He split carries evenly with LeGarrette Blount. Johnson had 9 carries. Blount had 7. However, it was actually Theo Riddick who had the most snaps of the 3 running backs, which is so puzzling to me because Kerryon Johnson has been so good this year. He's broken the lowly streak of the Lions not having a 100-yard rusher. He did that against Tom Brady and the Patriots the week prior, too. So why not feed the beast? Why not feed Kerryon Johnson more in that game? And then the touchdown run that had Jeff Heath hobbling over to the sidelines. He just trucked Jeff Heath en route to that touchdown. I don't understand that. Makes little sense when you consider that Detroit had to mostly abandon the run in the second half, and Riddick provides both the best pass protection and receiving threat of the group. But still, Kerryon Johnson was moving the ball consistently on the ground and has been for 2 weeks now. I thought they should have fed him more. But again, the offense wasn't the problem here. Again, I thought that Matthew Stafford had a great game. You know, linking up with his receivers and, you know, Golden Tate. Kenny Galladay, arguably the team's number one receiver right now. You know, I thought he could have been targeted maybe a little bit more. But again, Matthew had it rolling with Golden Tate. Two touchdown passes to Golden Tate in that game. But Kenny Galladay, if you got him on your fantasy team, I'm very jealous. Kenny Galladay, though, is probably the most consistent out of the wide receiving core for the Lions. But defensively, the Lions, the game plan was pretty clear. They tried to bulk up this week and failed to stop Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, Deshaun Hand, Eric Lee, A'shaun Robinson, Sylvester Williams, Ricky Jean-Francois all saw a higher percentage of snaps this week. The biggest boost was actually for Hand, who went from 48% of snaps last week to a whopping 70% this week against the Cowboys. Also interesting on the front line, A'shaun Robinson clearly reclaiming his role as starter over Ricky Jean-Francois or Jean-Francois. Robinson has been credited with back-to-back starts right now, but they just could not slow down Zeke. And I understand Zeke is a hybrid back because, again, you can put him in so many different ways. He's a great receiving back, and that is what burned the Detroit Lions in the end. Jarrett Davis is so disappointing. He has been such a disappointing draft pick for the Lions, Jack. He can't cover anybody. That's the big thing. He can't cover anybody, and he lets whoever he's lined up man-to-man with just blow right by him. And, you know, listening to Ezekiel Elliott after the game, I mean, Zeke knew it was man-to-man coverage. He was set up in the slot. He looked to his right. I forget who the receiver was to his right, but he saw that the Lions corner was set up pretty close to that receiver. And he said, oh, this is man-to-man. I'm going against Jarrett Davis. I'm gone. And it's a play they work on all the time. Dak Prescott chomping at the bit to hike that football, and bam, that was it. Game over. He links up with Zeke on the right sideline. Those are winning plays. And, you know, the Cowboys found a way. And now, you know, looking at the Lions' schedule now, I mean, they will play the Green Bay Packers this upcoming weekend. That will be a home game, 1 p.m. kick time at Ford Field. And then from there, they play, you know, Ryan Tannehill and the Miami Dolphins and the Seahawks after that, then the Minnesota Vikings. But I just don't see, especially looking at the NFC North picture right now, there's no way the Lions can make the playoffs now. I think that conversation is dead and gone right now, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably the fourth best team in the division, as much as I hate to say it. I mean, it's hard to tell with the Vikings. Kirk Cousins has been kind of disappointing, to be honest, and I think you can kind of tell they're missing Pat Shurmur as well.
Bad game against the Bills for the Vikes, and then you play the L.A. Rams. The LA Rams are, man, that team I think is going to be in the Super Bowl this season.
It's Rams-Chiefs, man. That's all it looks like right now, right?
That'd be fun.
It's going to be a hell of a game.
That'd be fun if that happens. But, yeah, I think the Vikings are clearly the better team, though, in comparison
to the Lions. Absolutely, for sure. Yeah. And then to your other point about Jarrett Davis, I agree with you. I actually, you know what, that's the play people are going to remember in that game, is him getting burned by Zeke Elliott. Prior to that, I actually thought he'd looked slightly improved from early on in the season, but I mean, just as a whole, that draft class, that what was that, 2017? Mm-hmm. I mean, Jarrett Davis, first-round pick. Tease Tabor, the second-round pick, can't get on the field over Nevin Lawson. That one hurts. Right. Kenny Galladay's a good player. I think we can tell. Kenny Galladay's a good player, and he's going to get better. But Michael Roberts, the tight end, was the fourth-round pick. And then Jamal Agnew was the fifth-round pick. I think he's a good player, too. But
Agnew's,
I mean,
solid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we got some solid skill players out of that draft, certainly. But, I mean, as a whole, that's a tough-looking draft right now. And I don't know, man. Early returns on Bob Quinn looked pretty solid, but all of a sudden now I'm not so sure. Because even the Lions' best players right now, you know, Matt Stafford and Darius Slay, those were Mayhew guys.
Yeah,
and I didn't think Mayhew was a great GM at all, but I mean,
right,
they're the talent on this team right now.
Right, and now, looking at the injury report now, I mean, now you have TJ Lang with this concussion problem.
Can't stay healthy.
Yep, and he's had concussion problems, as I noted in the headliners, throughout his career, which is very scary for his long-term health. And now Quandre Diggs, he suffered a broken hand in that loss to the Cowboys. So not only did they lose that heartbreaker to the Cowboys, they lose Lang now at starting right guard. And now Quandre Diggs, he left the game with a hand injury, and they did x-rays, and, yeah, he does have a fractured bone in his hand. So it's not clear how much time he'll miss, but that's not a good sign. So your thoughts on the Detroit Lions with just 3 minutes left here in the hour now. We'll get to those on tomorrow's Current Sports. I see many of you commenting on our Facebook page right now at facebook.com/WKAR News. And I promise you on tomorrow's Current Sports, we will get to this whole Le'Veon Bell discussion, because why now? That's the question I have with Bell. You know, why not wait? I mean, if you're going to hold out and see this thing through, why not wait until week 10 like we thought you were going to do? I mean, why show up week 8 against the Cleveland Browns? I think he's in his feelings, to steal a line from Drake, right? I think he's sitting on that couch in South Florida and watching his team suffer. You know, he watched that Sunday Night Football loss at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens, and I think it hit him that, man, I should be out there. But why now? I'll try to answer that question, and I'm going to break down this whole Le'Veon Bell discussion. I don't think I'm in the majority in this. I'm not on Le'Veon Bell's side. I think you have taken the opposite.
Very much so on Le'Veon's side.
You are on Le'Veon's side. Alec, you are as well, I believe, when we had this initial conversation. And I'll explain why on tomorrow's Current Sports, because I think there's a few things that we are overlooking when having this conversation about Le'Veon Bell's contract. All right? So, if that ain't a tease, I don't know what is. Tune in tomorrow for the Hump Day edition of Current Sports with Al Martin. And we'll also have further thoughts on the world of college football. You don't want to miss that. And have a great afternoon, folks. Stay warm. Stay dry. It's a rainy one here in mid-Michigan. Until then, we are on a 23-hour break. I'm Al Martin, reminding you to always be easy, people.